Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Agribusiness. Packaged bugs? It's chicken feed. Garver Feeds partnering with Innova Feed for a local supply of ingredients. By Tony Reed, Decatur. Why did the chicken cross the road? So she could chow down on the aptly named Clucker's Delight, packed with protein-rich black soldier fly larvae. And while the prospect of pecking at dead bug babies might make you regurgitate your cornflakes, it's like Christmas and birthdays all rolled into one for the voracious appetites of chicken and poultry. The chicken who crossed the 200 block of East Wabash Avenue recently was visiting the Garver Feed store in downtown Decatur to try out the said Clucker's Delight, a potent mix of seed and other goodies liberally laced with the yummy larvae. The bugs are part of Garver Feed's offerings geared toward everything from the professional poultry raising market to backyard birders keen to make their feeders a gastronomic must-have for passing wild birds. And now, thanks to a recent business partnership, the soldier fly larvae are being sourced locally from Decatur's very own Innova Feed bug breeding plant, which harvests the critters as animal chow. It's churning out the larvae by the countless millions and has been keen to win over local suppliers like Garver Feeds. Doing the taste testing at Garver was a fancy Japanese bantam, part of a coop of 40 chickens looked after and bred by 15-year-old Lydia Worsham from Oakley, with help from her mom, Lisa Balding. Chickens are definitely tiny dinosaurs, and they will eat anything, even mice and snakes, said Balding, but they love black soldier fly larvae. Her daughter is involved in 4-H and also shows her birds in professional shows as well, harvesting her flock for eggs, but drawing the line at eating the feathered dinosaurs themselves. And once you get them really socialized, you can easily tell each one apart, as they have completely different personalities, said Worsham. But they all like eating bugs. It makes for healthier birds. Locally sourced. Her mom believes that they are likely to stay even healthier now that the bug ingredient in their diet is coming from Innova Feed plant, just down the road, so to speak. I am excited about the supply being local because it will mean less shipping, so you don't have the delay, and it's not going to be an older product, said Balding. I think people with chickens are going to like that. The appropriately named Stefani mix, officer manager at Garver, said the 127-year-old company sells the larvae on their own, as well as mixed in with different seed concoctions. In all, Garver retails more than 20 varieties of bird and animal feeds, and has long offered nutritional bug goodies, such as mealworms and black soldier fly larvae. But she said those bug supplies were sourced overseas. Now, since French-owned Innova Feed hatched its North American Insect Innovation Center on North Brush College Road in April, she shares Balding's enthusiasm over the dramatically shortened supply chain. It's nice that this source of whole, dried, black soldier fly larvae is not just made in America, but right in our own backyard, added Mix, who raises chickens herself. Black soldier fly larvae are high in both protein and calcium, and that's also good for the bird's eggs. And it's just really nice to have around if you're trying to spoil your chickens, or trying to put them to bed, or something, and persuade them to go into their coop. You toss some black soldier fly larvae in there, and the chickens come running. Garver Feed offerings that feature the bugs blended with different seed and other ingredient cocktails include the aforementioned Clucker's Delight, along with Chicken Munch Mix and Bird Munch Mix, this one aimed at the backyard wild bird feeding market. And we'll just have to see what other ideas we can come up with next, said Mix. Good business. Business is good, too, at DeBuer's Seed and Feed in Mattoon. This venerable business has been indulging in foul play since 1914 and is a longtime customer of Garver's. It's now busy retailing the Inova Feed fly larvae to its backyard bird and commercial poultry customers. Owner Bernie DeBure says birds of all kinds love them, and he has noticed that even some of the owners raising commercial poultry will use bug-enriched chow to indulge their flocks. Chickens are spoiled rotten now. They are not chickens. They are pets anymore, you know, he explained. He sells the larvae straight, and they also offer their own custom seed mixes with varieties to please the most discerning beak. People come from a long way to buy from us, he added. All of this, of course, is very good news for Inova Feed. In the great scheme of things, the sales from its Decatur plant, which took wing as a pilot project, are chicken feed compared to what's coming in the future. A ramped up industrial scale operation churning out around 60,000 tons of bug-derived protein and nutritional products a year. But that roost is several years down the road, and Inova Feed says it's comforting, in the meantime, to see that its buggy products are selling well and are appreciated. We are excited, said Celine Datton, the company's market development manager. She said the pilot plant has been helping Inova Feed figure out some bumps in the road, but it's been steadily finding its footing, and recently got the power boost of an $11.7 million federal grant. And us being able to sell to Garver Feeds is just showing that it's going really well, because we would not be able to do that if it wasn't going smoothly in Decatur, Datton added. So far, so good. It's what's for dinner. Bugs in the food chain aren't just for the birds, however. Entomophagy, the practice of eating insects as human food, is what's for dinner globally, with some 80% of the world's nations chowing down on bugs as part of their diet, according to numbers from the University of Minnesota. Datton, however, emphasized insects for human nutrition is definitely not on the Inova Feed diet plan in North America. The market is just so big in terms of animal nutrition that human nutrition is not as much of a priority for us right now, she said. And singling out American cuisine in particular, she added, you know, consumer acceptance is very, very tiny. But Professor Sujaya Rao, head of the Department of Entomology at the University of Minnesota's College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, says it's all about overcoming the reluctance to take that first bite. She recommends the cookbook Creepy Crawly Cuisine for those gourmands brave enough to bite down on bugs. Her favorite recipe? Mealworms with chili and garlic sauce, according to a story on the college's website. U.S. elections. GOP in Congress eyes voting changes. Republicans will likely see Dem pushback. By Christina A. Cassidy, Associated Press, Atlanta. Republicans plan to move quickly in their effort to overhaul the nation's voting procedures. Seeing an opportunity with control of the White House and both chambers of Congress to push through long-sought changes that include voter ID and proof of citizenship requirements. They say the measures are needed to restore public confidence in elections, an erosion of trust that Democrats note was fueled by false claims from President-elect Donald Trump and his allies of widespread fraud in the 2020 election. In the new year, Republicans will be under pressure to address Trump's desires to change how elections are run in the U.S., something he continues to promote despite his win in November. The main legislation that Republicans expect to push will be versions of the American Confidence in Elections Act and the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, said GOP Representative Brian Steele of Wisconsin, chair of the Committee on House Administration, which handles election-related legislation. The proposals are known as the ACE and SAVE Acts, respectively. As we look to the new year with unified Republican government, we have a real opportunity to move these pieces of legislation not only out of committee, but across the House floor and into law, Steele said. we need to improve Americans' confidence in elections. Republicans are likely to face opposition from Democrats and have little wiggle room with their narrow majorities in the House and Senate. Steele said he expects there will be some reforms and tweaks to the original proposals and hopes Democrats will work with Republicans to refine and ultimately support them. New York Representative Joe Morrell, the ranking Democrat on the committee, said there is an opportunity for bipartisan agreement on some issues, but said the two previous GOP bills go too far. Our view and the Republicans' view is very different on this point, Morrell said. They have spent most of the time in the last 2 years and beyond really restricting the rights of people to get to ballots, and that's at the state level and the federal level. And the SAVE Act and the ACE Act both do that, make it harder for people to vote. Morrell said he wants to see both parties support dedicated federal funding for election offices. He sees other bipartisan opportunities around limiting foreign money in U.S. elections and possibly imposing a voter ID requirement if certain safeguards are in place to protect voters. Democrats say some state laws are too restrictive in limiting the types of IDs that are acceptable for voting, making it harder for college students or those who lack a permanent address. Morrell said he was disappointed by the GOP's claims in this year's campaigns about widespread voting by non-citizens, which is extremely rare, and noted how those claims all but evaporated once Trump won. Voting by non-citizens is already illegal and can result in felony charges and deportation. You haven't heard a word about this since Election Day, Morrell said. It's an Election Day miracle that suddenly the thing that they had spent an inordinate amount of time describing as a rampant problem, epidemic problem, didn't exist at all. Before the November election, House Republicans pushed the SAVE Act, which passed the House in July, but stalled in the Democrat-controlled Senate. It requires proof of citizenship when registering to vote and includes potential penalties for election officials who fail to confirm eligibility. Republicans say the current process relies on what they call an honor system with loopholes that have allowed non-citizens to register and vote in past elections. While voting by non-citizens occurred, research and reviews of state cases show it to be rare and typically a mistake rather than an intentional effort to sway an election. Under the current system, those seeking to register are asked to provide either a state driver's license or the last four numbers of a Social Security number. A few states require a full Social Security number. Republicans say the voter registration process is not tight enough because people in many states can be added to voter rolls even if they do not provide this information, and that some non-citizens can receive Social Security numbers and driver's licenses. They believe the current requirement that anyone completing a voter registration form sign under oath that they are a U.S. citizen is not enough. They want to force states to reject any voter registration application for which proof of citizenship is not provided. Republicans say that could include a real ID-compliant driver's license, a passport, or a birth certificate. In Georgia, a perennial presidential battleground state, education officials said they have not encountered any hiccups verifying the citizenship status of its nearly 7.3 million registered voters. They conducted an audit in 2022 that identified 1,634 people who attempted to register, but were not able to be verified as U.S. citizens by a federal database. A second audit this year used local court records to identify people who said they could not serve as a juror because they were not a U.S. citizen. Of the 20 people identified, six were investigated for illegal voting, though one of those cases was closed because the person had since died. What we've done by doing those audits is give voters confidence that we do not have non-citizens voting here in Georgia, said Brad Raffensperger, Georgia's Secretary of State. And when society is highly polarized, you have to look at building trust. Trust is the gold standard. Raffensperger, a Republican who supports both voter ID and proof of citizenship requirements, credits the state's early adoption of Real ID and use of automatic voter registration for ensuring voter lists are accurate. The latter is something he hopes more Republicans will consider. As he argued, it allowed Georgia election officials to use the Motor Vehicle Agency's process to verify citizenship and track people moving in and around the state. You have to get it right, because you're talking about people's priceless franchise to vote, Raffensperger said. Shelby County, charges against board member bomb dropped, by Brendan Moore, Shelbyville. The cloud of a criminal indictment no longer hangs over Shelby County Board Vice Chair Teresa Baum, Democrat, Shelbyville. Criminal charges filed against Baum last year by former Shelby County State's Attorney Robert Hanlon were dismissed after Effingham County State's Attorney Aaron Jones, appointed special prosecutor last May, said he would no longer pursue the case. Jones told the Herald and Review that the decision boiled down to his belief that he could not meet his burden of proof based on the available evidence. The short answer to it is that I didn't believe that I could prove that she had the knowledge or criminal intent required to obtain a conviction on either of the offenses that she was charged with, Jones said. The felony charges against Baum, 69, were unusual. One count each of holding simultaneous appointments and unlawful participation. Baum was accused by Hanlon, who resigned last April, of breaking the law by previously serving as a Rose Township Cemetery trustee while also being a county board member. Prosecutors had argued that a person cannot legally hold two public offices at the same time. Baum has been on the county board for 3.5 years. And was invited to fill a cemetery board trustee vacancy at the end of 2022. She said at the time that she had no idea doing both public jobs was illegal. At the time, Hanlon filed another kind of lesser legal action over the issue, called a quo warranto complaint, to force Baum to stop occupying both posts. Baum resigned her cemetery trustee role in August after Hanlon's action, and the state's attorney told the Herald and Review at that time he had filed the complaint instead of criminal prosecution because he wanted the minimal penalty necessary to bring about compliance. "Of course I'm relieved," Baum told the Herald and Review on Monday. "I can put it to you that way. It should never have happened to start with." The case was perceived by many to have a political motivation. Baum at the time was the lone Democrat serving on the 22-person county board. And she was among the most outspoken critics of Hanlon and his allies on the board. However, the political winds have shifted in the county of about 20,000 people. After 2 years of heated board meetings over the future of the county, including the status of the county-owned farm and dive team, several new board members were elected in November, resulting in the balance of power shifting away from the faction that had been allied with Hanlon. The new board subsequently selected Baum its vice chair during its December reorganization meeting. Baum's attorney filed a motion to dismiss in November, and in a motion filed December 23rd, Jones formally said he would not pursue the prosecution any further, and the case was dismissed. Macon County Courts, 2 years for attacker in landlord dispute. Matthew Burton also gets 24 months of probation. By Tony Reed, Decatur. Matthew S. Burton, the Decatur tenant who took out his rage over an issue with his landlord by laying a severe beating on a 65-year-old man, has been sent to prison for 2 years. The 35-year-old defendant had been due to face a jury trial December 17th, but appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on December 16th and said he was willing to take a plea deal that saw a charge of home invasion dismissed. Burton then admitted the offenses of aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. He also pleaded guilty to a further offense of aggravated battery to a peace officer after he punched Decatur Police Department officer Nicholas Stankiewicz in the left eye. In addition to the prison term, Judge Rodney Forbes placed Burton on probation for 24 months and ordered him to pay $930 in restitution in the wake of the violence, which dates to the night of July 27th. A sworn affidavit describing the crimes said Burton had shown up on the doorstep of the 65-year-old victim in the 2900 block of Wasson Way. The affidavit does not specifically identify the victim as the landlord, but said he was agitated over landlord issues, and when the victim answered the door, he was verbally abused before Burton punched through the screen door and hit the man in the face. The affidavit quotes the victim as saying he tried to use the door to force Burton away, but was overpowered and dragged outside. He was then repeatedly beaten in a wild flurry of punches that didn't stop until the victim's 27-year-old son intervened and ended the attack. While speaking with the victim, officers observed him to have bloodied, bruised, and scraped knees, both left and right, bloodied, bruised, and scraped elbows and forearms, both left and right, a busted lower right lip, a large lump of raised skin to his left forehead and cheek, said Stankiewicz, who signed the affidavit. The officer himself was punched as police fought to take Burton into custody, and Stankiewicz described the defendant as being highly intoxicated by either alcohol, drugs, or a combination thereof. It should be noted that the 65-year-old victim and his family expressed fear for when Matthew is released from jail, Stankiewicz added. And while another part of Burton's sentencing orders him specifically to stay away from the victim and family, it doesn't look like the defendant will have to serve that much of his custodial sentence. He gets day-for-day credit and was given a further credit of 5 months off his total sentence for time spent in custody since his arrest. Forbes also recommended him for drug abuse treatment while he is in prison. Mount Zion Police Department takes future space into custody. Village acquires properties to meet anticipated needs, by Tony Reed. Mount Zion. The Mount Zion Police Department has taken into custody some useful space right next door to its current headquarters at 400 West Main Street, with an eye on future expansion to give its officers more room. The recently demolished buildings that used to be the cops' neighbors contain Vollmer's TV repair shop and a residential structure, but they've been empty and forlorn for more than 4 years. Mount Zion Village Administrator Julie Miller told the Herald and Review that the village had spent $100,000 to acquire the properties with an eye to helping out the police department. Police Chief Adam Skundberg said there are no finalized plans yet, but he knows what he would like to see happen. We're not that crunched for space at the moment, but it gives us an opportunity in the future so that we can decide how best we can utilize it, he said. And when you are looking towards the future, you know that space is going to be an issue for us. The future in terms of development might not be that far away, however. Skundberg said we could be looking at something happening within the next 8 to 12 months or so. There is nothing written in stone. They just got the building down last week, Skundberg added. So I'm sure I will sit down with Julie Miller and we will go over what those options are. The chief hopes those options will include more office space, garage parking, a locker room area, and just more room for pressing issues like evidence storage. He said his team of 11 sworn officers and 2 support staff have basically no locker space now, and there is only enclosed garage parking for 3 of the department's 7 vehicles. Skundberg said the newly acquired space provides ample opportunity for all of that to be remedied, the cleared-away buildings freeing up an area that would boost the room they have now by a factor of 50%. He said space is on the mind of many police chiefs right now, as changed laws on evidence and records retention demand ever more room for storage. We're just holding on to stuff for much longer, he explained. The Mount Zion Police Department's last big expansion came when its former roommates, the village and min offices, got a new home and moved out. The village leadership had settled into their custom-built office complex, combined with a convention center in a 28,000-square-foot building on East Village Parkway in 2011. That's when we took over the whole building we have now, said Skunberg. And what a blessing it was when that happened, because we were really cramped for space prior to that. Birthdays for January 2nd. TV host Jack Hanna, Jack Hanna's Into the Wild, is 78. Actor Wendy Phillips, I Am Sam, is 73. Actor Cynthia Sykes, St. Elsewhere, is 71. Actor Gabriel Carteris, Beverly Hills 90210, is 64. Actor Tia Carrera is 58. Actor Cuba Gooding Jr. is 57. Model Christy Turlington is 56. Actor Tay Diggs, the best man, is 54. Actor Renee Elise Goldsberry, Broadway's Hamilton, is 54. Singer Doug Robb of Hoobastank is 50. Actor Dax Shepard, Parenthood, is 50. Sax player guitarist Jerry DePizzo Jr. of OAR is 46. Singer Kelton Kesey of Immature and of IMX is 44. Actor Kate Bosworth is 42. Actor Anthony Carrigan, Barry, is 42. Musician Trombone Shorty is 39. Singer Bryson Tiller is 32. Vote for the H&R Player of the Week by Anderson Kimball. Here are the nominees for the Herald and Review Player of the Week. Scroll through each nominee, then mark your vote. Voting will continue through Friday at noon, with the results revealed online on Friday afternoon and in print Saturday morning. Nominations for future weeks can be sent to anderson.kimball@lee.net. Reagan Filkin, Clinton. Filkin signed with Illinois College this month and has helped the Maroons to a 2-0 start in the Central Illinois Conference. Caden Gardner, Warrensburg-Latham. Gardner led the way for the Cardinals to win the Macon County Tournament, and his ability to score inside and from beyond the arc has helped them to an undefeated start. Lincoln Kester, Mount Zion. Kester is the program's all-time leading scorer after he willed the Braves to a second win over Champaign Centennial this season. Kobe Lane, Maroa Forsyth. Lane has been the top scorer for the Trojans lately, including an impressive 54-point outburst in a win over Meridian in the middle of December. Sean Lee, MacArthur. Lee had 28 points in a win over Oakville in the consolation final of the Collinsville Holiday Classic. Keller Stocks, Mount Zion. Stocks brought his ability on the gridiron back to the wrestling mat by winning his weight class at the Porta Rex Avery Invitational. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. Please stay tuned.